This is the Fast Fishing Podcast for February 12th, 2010. I'm John Wheeler, your host. Have you ever thought about how many zeros there are in a pico of something? Remember back in grade school when we learned about the metric system of measures and units? We started out with units that are easy to visualize. Meters, for example. And meters get 1,000 times bigger and become kilometers. Meters also get 1,000 times smaller and become millimeters. We understand these examples intuitively because we have a frame of reference and we can visualize each of those units of length and distance. Units of mass are the same way. We know that a gram is a small unit of mass. We can hold a gram of almost anything in the palm of our hand. For example, a penny weighs 2.5 grams. Stack up 400 pennies and you have a kilogram, or 1,000 grams. Cut a thin copper shaving off of a penny, and you have a milligram, or 1/1,000th of a gram. Again, these are things that we can see, and that makes it easy for us to understand. As our schooling progressed, we learned about very large and very small numbers, exponents, scientific notation. When we put these principles to use in science, we learned that there are other units of measure larger than a kilo and smaller than a milli. These are a little harder to visualize because we have to think in terms we can't see. For example, the mass of Mount Everest is 3 times 10 to the 8th grams, or 30 megagrams. The mass of planet Earth is 5.9 times 10 to the 24th grams, or about 6 yottagrams. That's 6 followed by 24 zeros. On the opposite end of the scale is the prefix nano, or 10 to the minus 9th of something. A nanometer is 1 times 10 to the minus 9th meters. And a nanosecond is 0 point, and let me count this right now, 0.00000000001 seconds, or 1 with 9 zeros behind the decimal point. It was tough for me to visualize a nanosecond of time until I learned that it takes about 1 nanosecond for a beam of light to travel 1 foot. That kind of puts the nano into perspective, doesn't it? I mean, it's a really, really small unit. What's amazing to me is some of the newest computer chips have transistors that have a thickness of 45 nanometers. Just simply amazing. We can only see things that small with powerful electron microscopes. A pico is smaller than a nano. In fact, it's 1,000 times smaller. Pico means there are 12 zeros behind the decimal point. Even for a person like me who deals with engineering and science concepts all the time, it's very difficult to visualize a pico of anything. A pico is so small that even a million picos is still very small. It takes a million picograms to make 1 gram. If you have a million picocuries in a liter of water, it would take 1 million liters to contain 1 curie. To give you a sense of scale, an Olympic-sized swimming pool, about 2.5 million liters, filled with water containing a concentration of 1 million picocuries of tritium per liter of water, would hold only about 0.3 milligrams of tritium. Said another way, if I had an Olympic swimming pool full of water and I sprinkled in some tritium, a tiny amount, 0.003 grams of tritium, into that swimming pool, and then I mixed it up, I would have a pool full of water that contained 1 million picocuries of tritium per liter. It's very hard to measure anything as small as a nano or a pico of anything, but there's one area of engineering where we can. Advances in science and technology have given us the ability to measure radioactivity in very, very small amounts. In fact, we can measure radioactivity down to the amount released by a single energy particle. This gives us the ability to quantify material in extremely small amounts. Anti-nuclear activists from around the country, aided by an uninformed media, have grabbed onto the issue of tritium leaks at some nuclear plants in the United States. And they're using this issue very effectively to create fear and distrust. Nervous politicians are retreating from positions of outward support for nuclear plants, even though the federal government, state agencies, and independent scientists all agree that none of the leaks pose any threat to public health and safety. Every form of energy production has some effect on the environment. Even wind and solar energy, which are viewed by many as environmentally benign, have measurable effects. the production of solar panels results in highly toxic chemicals, and worn-out panels could leach chemicals into water supplies. Wind turbines cause noise pollution, kill bats and migratory birds, and catastrophic blade failures throw lethal fragments hundreds or even thousands of feet. Coal plants dump toxins into the land, air, and water, and the radioactive release from coal plants are hundreds of times higher than allowed for nuclear plants. Gas plants release greenhouse gases and, as we've seen in the last week, can and do explode and kill people. In fact, gas pipeline accidents kill people all across the United States every year. When nuclear plants shut down, all the other plants in that market make money, lots of money. Don't think for a moment that that fact is lost on the people who are in the business of selling power from natural gas or the gas distributors themselves. I'm also sure this cash bonanza is not lost on politicians who are the recipients of donations from coal, oil, and gas companies. It's time for lawmakers, public service boards, and elected officials to do a reality check. In the case of tritium in the groundwater, we're talking about microscopic amounts of material with zero safety impact and zero environmental risk. Anytime a nuclear plant is shut down, forced to reduce power, or delayed in starting up, the replacement power has to come from another energy source, usually natural gas. And when natural gas demand rises, we get higher electricity bills, huge increases in air pollution, and further reliance on a volatile, dangerous energy source. Thanks for listening to the show. This is John Wheeler for This Week in Nuclear. Have a great nuclear day.